Harwich. It's 7 o'clock.
From WBUR in Boston, I'm Bill Littlefield, and this is NPR's Only a Game. The Bowl Championship Series matchups have knotted the undergarment of many a college football devotee. Ahead on Only a Game, an absurdist look at the bowl season. Also, the sometimes silly, sometimes sordid tale of youth league football in Miami. And the 11th annual Only a Game Holiday Sports Gift Guide. Also ahead, how Sherry Kemp's Club K softball camp is changing the fast pitch landscape.
I don't think a lot of coaches were coming to Nashville to recruit top Division I players. Now they know that this has to be a stop because she's producing great players. And as a result, you've seen softball in the Nashville area just become great.
Stay tuned.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Carol Van Dam. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has signed a fiscal recovery plan that will ask voters in March to let the state borrow $15 billion and set new restrictions on spending. Schwarzenegger says he's proud that he was able to reach a compromise with Democratic lawmakers to set new restrictions on spending.
We are taking the inherited debt, roll it into one bond, which is the $15 billion economic recovery bond. Two, the Balanced Budget Act, which means that it gives the voters of California a guarantee that the politicians of this state will never, ever again spend more money than the state takes in.
The restrictions are not nearly as tough as those initially proposed by the new governor, but Schwarzenegger says he's willing to sign a more modest plan to get moving on solving the state's budget crisis. Hundreds of demonstrators marched in cities around California on Friday to protest the repeal of a law that would have allowed illegal immigrants to get driver's licenses. NPR's Scott Horsley reports.
Protests were held in Los Angeles, Orange County, San Francisco, and San Jose. But a proposed boycott of schools and workplaces does not appear to have gained much traction. Demonstrators were angered by the California legislature's about-face on a bill that would have allowed undocumented immigrants to drive legally in the state. The driver's license law was repealed last week at the urging of Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. Demonstrators also hope to show the economic clout of California's Latino population and urge the state's 12 million Latinos to stay home from school, work, and shopping centers. In San Diego's city schools, where nearly 40% of the students are Latino, administrators reported no sharp drop in attendance, although some students are thought to be out sick with the flu. Scott Horsley, NPR News, San Diego.
Canada's new prime minister is moving quickly to implement one of the changes he's promised to make. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, that's to improve relations with Washington.
Prime Minister Paul Martin says he'll begin the process of healing relations with the U.S. on Monday with a telephone call to President Bush. The two are to discuss bilateral issues such as trade and security. They will also hold their first meeting at a January summit in Mexico. Relations between Ottawa and Washington have soured in recent years, mainly over trade disputes and Jean Chrétien's refusal to bring Canada into the war against Iraq. Some of Chrétien's policy initiatives have also rankled south of the border, such as proposed legislation on same-sex marriage and the decriminalization of marijuana. To show just how important the ties now are to the new prime minister, Paul Martin says he will personally chair a new cabinet committee on Canada-U.S. relations. Martin has also given the defense minister's job to David Pratt, one of the members of the Liberal Party who opposed Chrétien on the issue of Iraq. For NPR News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk in Toronto.
Israeli troops shot and killed a Palestinian woman who was riding in a taxi near the West Bank city of Nablus today. A military source says the woman's cab driver failed to stop. This is NPR. Taliban insurgents in Afghanistan are using the same tactics as their Iraqi counterparts in efforts to find new ways to harass American troops, that according to U.S. Lieutenant Colonel Brian Hilferty. Hilferty says they're now targeting American patrols with roadside bombs. Three U.S. soldiers have been injured by roadside bombs since Thursday. For the third day this week, crowds demanding that Haitian President Jean-Bertrand Aristide resign have clashed with supporters of the president in the capital of Port-au-Prince. In the latest confrontation on Friday, at least four people were shot and wounded. Ed Thompson has more on the story.
The tension never subsided from Thursday's protest when thousands of students demanding that President Aristide step down were met by police tear gas and rock-throwing Aristide partisans. Opposition parties and civil groups urge Haitians to demonstrate, in their words, until the country is liberated. They blame Aristide for Haiti's severe economic and political problems. On Friday, the scene was much the same as Aristide supporters and opponents again confronted each other on the streets of Port-au-Prince, and riot police fired tear gas at the anti-government protesters. Anticipating Friday's violence, banks, stores, and schools closed, as did the U.S. Embassy. In Washington, a State Department spokesman said the Haitian government, in some instances, has assisted in the violent repression of demonstrations. The State Department issued a warning against traveling to Haiti. For NPR News, I'm Ed Thompson.
New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg is blasting the owners of a tugboat company that took control of a Staten Island ferry that smashed into a concrete pier in October. 10 people were killed in that accident. The company has filed a claim with the city for $6 million. In his radio show, Bloomberg said that's what human beings are supposed to do. I'm Carol Van Dam, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Kresge Foundation, building capacity with challenge grants since 1924. On the web at kresge.org.
Major support for Only a Game comes from Bicon Dental Implants. Since 1985, offering discerning patients and dentists options for same-day replacement of missing and compromised teeth. Information online at bicon.com or at 800-88-BICON.
This is Only a Game. I'm Bill Littlefield. If Oklahoma had won, it would be simple, don't you see? The Sooners would be number one, unless they lost. And 3 and 2 and 4 would all fall into line quite neatly, right? But no, and so the BCS computer is uptight.
Boise State beat Hawaii, and USC can't. Hey, Notre Dame lost to Syracuse. Abnormal sample, so Oklahoma goes it, USC. Oh, see?
Joining me now to try to bring some semblance of order to the fractious college football bowl landscape is Dan Wetzel, national columnist for Yahoo Sports. Dan, welcome to Only a Game.
Thank you for having me, Bill. It's always a pleasure.
Isn't the BCS designed to make sure we don't have to pick which of the bowl games is the championship game?
Well, in theory it is. Real theory is that it's designed to kind of control and bring power to the 6 conferences that belong to the BCS and keep it out of the hands of the NCAA. Division I college football is the only sport that the NCAA does not crown an actual champion in. It's a quirky system. There's a lot of power. It's a little like Washington politics. It's very difficult to figure out what the design is of each plan. But in theory, we're supposed to have the number one versus number two team play for the national championship. In this case, we have the number two and number three team playing for what they're calling the national championship. And so to say that it is contentious and controversial right now is an understatement in certain circles.
Many people feel that the Rose Bowl between USC and Michigan on January 1st will constitute the true national championship game and not January 4th's Sugar Bowl. If USC wins and splits the national title, grabs a part of it for themselves, is the whole BCS system in danger of becoming obsolete?
Well, I think that what this has done by focusing such a spotlight on a number one team that isn't playing in what the BCS is calling the title game, there will be continued changes. And invariably, the momentum is headed to some level of a playoff. Eventually, we're going to get there. Now, that could be 5 years from now, that could be 10 years from now, but eventually college football is going to get to this point. But a split national title in the era of the BCS goes against every bit of its design. So I think that it just continues the drumbeat of that. No question, if USC wins the Rose Bowl against Michigan, the Associated Press, the sports writers, will vote them number one, and that will give them at least part of the, I guess, mythical national championship.
Meanwhile, tonight, the Heisman Trophy will be presented at the Yale Club in New York City. Oklahoma quarterback Jason White and Pittsburgh wide receiver Larry Fitzgerald are the front runners. Which of those two do you think will win it, or is there a surprise winner somewhere in the wings?
Well, you can make an honest case for about 4 or 5 of these players. It is truly a very even year for the Heisman. I think that Oklahoma quarterback Jason White will win it for 2 reasons. One, he's very deserving. He had a terrific season. the last game, notwithstanding his numbers compared to any other past Heisman Trophy winner. He had, I believe it's 40 touchdowns and only 8 interceptions on the year. I also believe that a number of the ballots, between 10 to 20%, were cast before the game against Kansas State. Mm-hmm. They have a weird system of voting where you can vote early. I would think that he will get a bump on that. So I think in a close race where there are a number of deserving candidates, that's going to help push him over the top. I think he will end up winning it.
Now, including the Heisman, there are 3 awards given to the nation's best player, as well as 2 different trophies for the best defensive player, separate awards for the best defensive lineman, interior lineman, overall lineman, linebacker, defensive back, running back, quarterback, senior quarterback, tight end, wide receiver, kicker, and punter. Have I missed anything?
It's like those, like, fourth grade award ceremonies. Everyone gets a star.
Everyone gets a plaque. Everybody's the best at something.
How don't you win? We could do better with not going with it. Hey, we're about making people feel good here in college football. You know, we want everyone to, a little self-esteem. Yeah, there is a ton of trophies, although the Heisman stands out almost more than any other award in sports. I think people care, or more discussion gets done and more money gets spent promoting Heisman winners than NFL MVPs, NBA MVPs. It's a really interesting award that the Heisman has probably done the best job marketing itself. Now, I guess everyone else is trying to be the next Heisman. I don't really see that happening.
On Tuesday, the annual cavalcade of bowls starts with the New Orleans Bowl featuring the Mean Green of North Texas and the Memphis State Tigers. We've spent a lot of time mocking bowl games for their sheer numbers over the years, but is having 731 different postseason classics such a good thing?
Well, again, it makes everybody feel good. it's absurd, no question. I think 56 teams are going bowling this year, and there's only 117 in all of Division I. So nearly half of the team, all you got to do is be in the top half.
Oh, man.
But if the Mean Green of North Texas get to enjoy themselves and have some fun playing some football, you know, who are we to argue? The other element of this that I think is nice is, as much as it's easy to question what are these bowls, particularly in some of these small towns or smaller communities, they mean a lot in places like Shreveport and Boise and El Paso, where as much as it's not the Rose Bowl and it's not the Super Bowl or whatever, at its quaint level, they have just as big of parades, they have just as big of festivals, that the people in the town come every year to go to the game. It is a tradition in these communities, and I think there's something nice about that so much of America is about what's the biggest and what's the best, and that's what the focus is. Sometimes it's okay to just be the Poulon Weed Eater Independence Bowl.
All right, this is the point of the interview where we put our analysts on the spot. So I'm going to ask you for a prediction. Which university or universities will lay claim to the national championship come January the 4th?
I believe it'll be USC. I believe they can get by Michigan, which is an excellent team and is playing as well as anybody. But I think the home game kind of atmosphere in Los Angeles is going to really help USC. And I think LSU, for almost the same reason, is going to be able to beat Oklahoma. LSU is playing in the Sugar Bowl in New Orleans, 80 miles from campus. And I think they're going to have a game plan to pick apart the OU team. OU is a little bit shook right now. So I think we will have a split title. Louisiana State will party on Bourbon Street, and USC will party in Santa Monica Pier, and everyone will be happy in the long run, and all of the anger over this will fade off as everyone enjoys their national championship.
Dan Wetzel is a national columnist for Yahoo Sports. Dan, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Bill, always a pleasure.
Thirteen games into the NFL season, the New England Patriots, 11-2, would appear to be on top of the world again. The Patriots, winners of the Super Bowl 2 years ago, ensured that they would finish atop the AFC East by beating the Miami Dolphins 12-0 on Sunday in the wind and snow. About the only unhappy note struck until just yesterday involved the dismissal 10 days ago of veteran punter Ken Walter. Walter was replaced by Brooks Barnard, who'd been cut by the Chicago Bears during training camp. Barnard pinned the Dolphins at their own 4-yard line with one of his punts, which led at least indirectly to an interception and the only touchdown the Pats scored that day. At Wednesday's press conference in Foxborough, Massachusetts, Pats coach Bill Belichick conceded, deadpan, that Barnard, quote, did okay. In the locker room a little later, kicker Adam Vinatieri, for whom Brooks Barnard had become the holder on field goal attempts, was a little more enthusiastic about the new kid.
He did a pretty good job out there, you know, with the conditions that, we're playing in a blizzard with 30-mile-an-hour winds. So to do what he did statistically and everything, he had a nice game.
Nice game? What would Messrs. Belichick and Vinatieri have said about Brooks Barnard if he hadn't 4 times pinned Miami inside the Dolphin 20? Probably that he should pack his bags and go find someplace else to punt, which brings up the question of what it's like for a team that characterizes itself as family to welcome a new member 12/16 of the way through the regular season. Patriots tight end Fred Baxter had part of the answer.
Me particularly, I'm worrying about my job, you know what I'm saying? So I just go and just give him some words of encouragement and just hope, you know, he's going to go out and then do a good job for us.
In pro football, us is a decidedly temporary construct. Players have to get used to turnover. But the departure of punter Ken Walter was perhaps especially tough for Adam Vinatieri. Walter was the holder for Vinatieri's field goals, including the kick with which he won the Super Bowl. Still, when Walter was released in place of Brooks Barnard, Vinatieri figured his old friend would still be rooting for the Pats, if for no other reason than the payout their continuing success would mean for Walter.
Oh, well, obviously, you know, I mean, I spend most of my days with our snapper and holders and that kind of situation, so we get a pretty good friendship going, and it's tough to see any of them go, but, you know, he's got a lot riding on this season still. I mean, he was a big success to our big reason for the success of our season this year, and he'll get some of the rewards for his job.
Regarding Brooks Barnard, Ken Walter's replacement, Vinatieri was philosophical and cheerful, and he maintained that virtually the whole team welcomed the new punter.
Yeah, everybody did. You know, that's the kind of team that we have. You know, everybody tries to, we're all in this thing together, you know. Ken's a great guy and a great punter, and we didn't want to see him go, but whoever comes in, you have to welcome with open arms and say, let's win a game. So he did a nice job, asked a bunch of questions, and found his way around this last week, and I think he's getting more comfortable every day he's here.
As it turned out, Brooks Barnard had a little over 1 day after Vinatieri's Wednesday comment to get more comfortable. At a press conference late Friday afternoon, Patriots coach Bill Belichick announced that Barnard had been released and that the new punter would be Ken Walter, the old punter. Ken is thrilled to be back, Walter's agent exclaimed, though it's perhaps fair to assume that he's also a little puzzled. Unless Coach Belichick changes his mind again, Ken Walter will be punting for the Patriots when they face Jacksonville tomorrow. It's 18 minutes past the hour. A great and storied Philadelphia tradition, Eagles Court, is in jeopardy, and for an unlikely reason. In previous seasons, Judge Seamus McCaffrey used Eagles Court to fine unruly pro football fans in Philadelphia, relieve them of their season's tickets, and incarcerate them on the premises. But since the Eagles have moved into Lincoln Financial Field, their new stadium, crowds have been behaving so well that Eagles Court has become unnecessary. This development is a surprise. In fact, the new stadium includes jail cells, but it also came with an enhanced video security system, a greater number of security guards, and more bathrooms. Team spokesman Ron Howard was reluctant to speculate about which changes had rendered Eagles Court irrelevant.
I'm Bob C. with these sports headlines. In yesterday's NHL action, the Florida Panthers vanquished the Montreal Canadiens by a score of 4-2. The Atlanta Thrashers doubled up the Pittsburgh Penguins 6-3. The Rangers were sharper than the Sabres of Buffalo. The score was 3-1 in favor of New York. And Dallas edged Chicago 1-0. Elsewhere, Edmonton and Phoenix skated to a 3-3 tie. Philadelphia and New Jersey ended the same way. and the Columbus Blue Jackets blew it in overtime against the St. Louis Blues, losing 3-2. For Only a Game, I'm Bob C. in Boston.
I'm Bill Littlefield. Coming up on Only a Game, the Music City makes a fast pitch to become the softball city. But first, the National Pop Warner Football Championships are taking place this weekend at Disney World in Florida. In We Own This Game, subtitled A Season in the Adult World of Youth Football, Robert Andrew Powell writes about a league where the rulebook says the goal is fun for all boys and girls, but in which one of the more successful coaches shouts, "Wipe that smile off your face, get ready to hurt somebody," at his 95-pound players. A league in which playoff games are so important they continue despite gunfire on the field. A league in which drug dealers openly reward some of the stars with cash. Robert Andrew Powell joins me now from the studios of WLRN in Miami. Robert, welcome to Only a Game.
Thanks, Bill.
Maybe the best way to give folks a feel for youth football in Miami is to talk just a little bit at the outset about Raul Campos, the self-styled, quote, Darth Vader of Pop Warner coaches. And this is a guy who's truly a legend in his own mind, right?
Well, he has some facts to back it up. He's won back-to-back national championships. And when I join him, he's trying to win his third straight national championship at the youth level. He's a guy known around the league. Everyone hates him because he recruits stud players to his parks, and he recruits them by giving them letter jackets, dinners after games. He goes to games, he transports them in limousines. He used to use a Hummer limousine, and now he uses a deluxe motor coach bus. He wanted to go to a game in a helicopter for the playoffs. And through these kind of inducements, you know, just giving a kid a free pair of shoes can be enough to recruit them to your team, and giving them a chance to go to Disney World every year where the national championships are played. He recruits great players, and then he becomes sort of a marked man down here. Other teams just hate his guts, and he sort of feeds off that.
It's one of Coach Campos's players, Jarmaine Brockington, who gets rewarded with cash after a win, even though Jarmaine quit at halftime in the game. What was going on there?
Well, they won. I guess it's a bottom line business. There's a surprising amount of money bet on these games. It's absolutely nothing for a game of six-year-olds to have $10,000 bets flying around. It can start corrupting sport at the six-year-old level. I mean, one of the things that I just found in this whole book was just how the professionalism that's trickled down from the pros to college and then from the college down to high schools, it's just natural that it would get down to this level.
You write that the gangs in some of the neighborhoods in Miami have a significant influence on the football games and on the kids who play them. How does that work?
Gangs are part of the community down here. I think less so in these days. They've neutralized some of the worst ones through law enforcement. But they have money, and they're interested in football. They will reward a player for playing a good game with, I've heard, you know, up to $4,000 if you play a particularly good game and a particularly key game. You know, it gets into larger issues of living. And in this community, being a gang member is a very common place to end up if you're a young man.
Miami area kids are very young when they start playing in the Optimists League and in the Pop Warner League. You write that some of them are so small that when they put on their helmets for the first time, they tip over. Were you exaggerating when you wrote that?
You see, they start as young as age 3 in full equipment with helmets, and you see these guys trying to catch passes, and they can't bring their arms together. And so the ball, if it manages to go to them 10 yards down the field, which is an achievement, they can't possibly bring their arms together because of their shoulder pads. And so it's, I mean, it's adorable. It really is adorable, actually, at that young level. But no, it's hard for them.
One of the teams with which you spend a considerable amount of time is the Liberty City Warriors, some of whom are only 8 years old. And before their season begins, their coach makes what I found to be a very strange decision about which offensive scheme to implement. Tell me about that.
He was an assistant coach at Liberty City for 8 years, and this was his first time to be a head coach. You have to go through a long period of paying your dues before they'll trust you to be a head coach. And so when he got it, he just got all gung-ho, and he decided to implement the offense from the Georgia Southern University, which is considered the most complicated offense in college football. And the people at the school, they spend all summer studying this system. They have 4 years to learn it when they're there. And he was trying to teach it in 1 month to people who don't even know how to do their multiplication tables yet. And it failed miserably. I'd be at practice, and I'd be listening to them tell the quarterback what to do, and I would get lost.
So basically, you had kids running around in circles in the backfield.
This team that I followed, the Liberty City Warriors, they had won a national championship a couple years earlier. But it's still Pop Warner football. It doesn't matter. Even at the highest level, you know, they run the wrong directions. They drop passes. They can't complete anything. It's not particularly beautiful football.
Your title, We Own This Game, comes from the attitude of some of the parents of the kids who play football in Miami. Is it fair to say that the importance of youth football to these folks cannot be exaggerated?
Well, it doesn't just come from the parents. The title itself comes from a rap singer named Luther Campbell, who's most famous for the song Me So Horny. It's important to a whole community. I have an uncle of one player who says football has become so ingrained with the identity of the black community in Miami that it's no longer part of the community. It is the community itself.
You report that lots of parents, coaches, and older siblings of some of the players in Miami see youth football as the way youngsters and their families can escape poverty and despair, even though the enormous odds against this particular escape route have been explained over and over and over again. It's a little bit like somebody buying a lottery ticket to try to change his life, except that you can buy a lottery ticket without an angry coach screaming at you, right?
Right. Well, I mean, that's kind of the cliche, is that sports are your ticket out of the ghetto. That doesn't mean it's not true, and it doesn't mean that people don't make that investment in it emotionally. And at the 10-year-old, 8-year-old level, this is a very serious, serious undertaking. It's not a recreational league in Miami in any way, and I suspect that crosses geography. I bet you could go into hockey in Minnesota and come with the same emphasis now.
Is what you found in Miami representative of youth football elsewhere in the U.S.?
I can't say so definitively, but I always felt that the excesses of youth sports, I could go anywhere in America and I could pick any sport in America and I could find the same excesses. You know, maybe not someone with a Hummer limousine and a helicopter, but I could find people who take it incredibly seriously, parents, kids. I focused on the sport in Miami and it gave me a chance to explore why this community takes it so seriously. But I don't think it's overall unique to Miami. And I don't think this is a book just about Miami. I think it's a book about us as Americans and why we make the investments we do.
At the end of the book, you return to Brian Johnson, the coach of the Liberty City Warriors, who has decided to stop coaching football because he says, quote, it's not about the kids anymore. I wonder, having read your book, whether it was ever about the kids.
That's a very good question. I can't say it is. I know that Brian is an incredibly decent human being. And he went in with this Georgia Southern offense, and he was going to have a national championship year, and he ended up having an extremely disappointing season, a losing season. And parents were riding him and calling for him to be removed and lobbying for his firing from a volunteer position. And he stuck it through, and his emphasis clearly is about the kids. Yes, he wanted to win. Yes, he was invested in it perhaps more than he should have been. I do see people whose heads are on completely straight, and I think the Liberty City Warriors program is overall a very healthy program in the middle of a community that takes it perhaps dangerously seriously.
Robert, you spent a lot of time not only with the Liberty City Warriors but with several other youth teams, with their coaches, with their parents, with the siblings, with the kids themselves. Do you come out of this experience feeling as if it's more positive than negative, the involvement in youth football in Miami?
I'm alarmed by certain extremities, if that's the right word. But I do see it as a positive thing. There's a kid in my book that I focus on, probably the one kid that I focus most on, named Diamond. I first got introduced to him at a practice where his mother was there, and she was riding him and saying, you know, keep your legs up, focus, tackle harder. And I was like, wow, I bet this kid's mother is just totally a weirdo. And so I followed up with that, and then you learn the whole picture about Diamond's life. You see that his father left him at birth and that his stepfather is a murderer doing two life sentences in prison. His role model, his father figure in his life, is his uncle, who's a drug dealer who's in a wheelchair, got shot in a drug deal. And you see that football in this boy's life is extremely positive. And you see him with these coaches who are extremely decent human beings, spending all that time with him. You want Diamond to stay in football, even though it is taken very seriously. Diamond, at the end of the book, he drops out of the league, and I wish he would get back in it.
Robert Andrew Powell is the author of We Own This Game, A Season in the Adult World of Youth Football, published by Atlantic Monthly Press. He joined me from the studios of WLRN in Miami. Robert, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thank you, Paul.
You can share your comments with Only a Game by writing to us, care of WBUR-FM, 890 Commonwealth Avenue, Boston, Massachusetts, 02215, or by emailing oag@wbur.bu.edu. You can leave comments on our listener line by calling 617-353-1860. You can visit Only a Game's website at www.onlyagame.org. In 1991, Sherry Kempf took a truck full of equipment and 10 students and created Club K, a fast-pitch softball training club. A year later, her granddad loaned her 2 months' rent for a 5,500-square-foot warehouse. Last month, Club K moved into its newest space, a sweeping 70,000-square-foot facility on the outskirts of Nashville with a staff of 7 instructors and over 1,000 members. Only a Game's Kim Green has this bags-to-pitches story.
Okay, so go ahead and warm up on your own. It's 7 o'clock on a Wednesday night, and Club K is packed. 5 preteens in catcher's gear practice blocking pitches on a dirt infield. Nearby, a few high schoolers smack line drives off a tee. In a pitching cage, instructor Sherry Kempf aims a radar gun at 5 junior high girls throwing their best heat.
What you're going to do is you're going to throw one at a time. Throw, 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 throw. Right, we'll be on that last mound, and I'm going to yell out your speed.
These girls look up to the 6-foot-tall Kempf in more ways than one. An All-American pitcher and finalist for the 1996 Olympic team, Kempf has excelled at fast-pitch softball for 30 years.
Megan, turn it up now. Don't guide it. Crack it out of here. 59.
11-year-old Meg Goins grooves a fastball into her dad's glove. Every week they drive 4 hours round trip from Pisgah, Alabama for a 1-hour group lesson. Goins has her sights set on a softball scholarship to a Division I-A college and figures Sherry Kempf can help get her there.
She doesn't only teach you how to pitch and be a successful pitcher, but she can help you get a scholarship if you work hard and stand out to her. She knows a lot of people, and she can say, hey, this kid, so-and-so, are really great. You need to watch them sometime.
Well, there ain't 1,000 kids a week coming through for nothing.
Meg's dad, Anthony, catches for her 6 nights a week at home and on Wednesdays at Club K. He knows that no scholarship's guaranteed, but he's convinced that Sherry Kempf can produce results.
That's why I don't mind coming up here 2 or 3 times a week. I mean, if she's going to go home and forget about this for 6 nights a week and him come up here on Wednesday nights, then I wouldn't be so enthused about it. But, you know, she's working her tail off like she is. I'm with her. There's a lot of teams in this area that the whole team's come here, and they'll beat you. They'll kick your end if you ain't somewhere learning how to play ball. There's very few that come in the world just naturals.
And that's the key to Kemp's philosophy. From the outset, she figured anyone could learn to catch, hit, and throw, but she wasn't sure she was the kind of instructor who could teach those skills.
I decided when I first started doing this that I was good at things when I played, and I want to be a good teacher, and I could not stand to not know the answers, and I couldn't stand to take someone's money and guess at the answer. So I went to the experts. I'm not telling you to pitch like I pitched, or I'm not looking at old pictures of myself or trying to figure this out. We've been to the American Sports Medicine Institute. We've done the biomechanical breakdowns. They know how the body moves and what it's supposed to do to perform anything, from walking to jogging to throwing a baseball overhand or a softball underhand. And so we've done a lot of that research.
Kemp's research even led to a patent for a urethane disc called the Spin Right Spinner that teaches players to throw pitches that curve, drop, or rise. She does a bustling mail-order business with it, along with a pitching book she's written and her own training videos. Her innovations, publications, and the stunning new building she and her partners built have garnered lots of attention. With over 30,000 square feet dedicated to amateur softball, it's the largest girls' fast-pitch training facility in the country, with a real dirt infield, batting and pitching cages, video cameras, even full-length mirrors for checking your follow-through. But the facility's not the only thing that keeps the students coming. Her graduates are her best advertisement.
I don't think I would be here without Sherry today, because at the level that I'm at.
Sarah Meek did get a full ride to a Division I school. Tonight, she's pitching for David Lipscomb University in Nashville. She started training with Kemp when she was 8 and went on to become Tennessee's all-time high school strikeout leader with more than 1,500 strikeouts in her 4-year career. She cites Club K's staff as the main reason she still takes lessons there.
The facility is incredible. It's probably one of the best in the country. I don't think anybody can beat it, but they're definitely what you keep going back for, not the dirt infield or the rips cage. They're definitely what you keep going back for. She's played at all the levels. She works really well with not only your mechanics. She always talks about the mental aspect of the game, which is, I think, so important. It's overlooked a lot.
Set up on the inside corner. Let's see if she can hit a spot in the inside corner.
David Lipscomb's head softball coach, Andy Lane, loves seeing his pitchers get extra help from Kemp. He plans to work out his whole team at Club K this winter. He also attends the club's annual college showcase to check out the hottest prospects, some of them not much older than sixth grader Meg Goins. He says Sherry Kemp has almost single-handedly made Nashville a softball recruiting hotspot.
I don't think a lot of coaches were coming to Nashville to recruit top Division I players. Now they know that this has to be a stop because she's producing great players. And as a result, over the last 10-15 years, you've seen softball in the Nashville area just become great.
Kemp hopes to expand her trademark club nationwide and add baseball training to her Nashville facility. But one thing she promises, Club K will always focus on girls. And to rising stars like Meg Goins, that matters.
There's more camps and stuff for boys, and it really makes you feel good that there's a place where you can go and learn. It's like you're number one.
For Only a Game, I'm Kim Green in Nashville.
It's 22 and a half minutes before the hour.
Support for Only a Game comes from the listeners of WBUR in Boston, where Only a Game is produced. Additional support comes from Thermo Electron, the scientific instruments company with a mission to advance drug discovery, improve manufacturing, and protect people and the environment. On the web at thermo.com. And from Nutter, McLennan & Fish, working to solve critical legal issues on local, national, and international levels. Information at Nutter.com. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Hi, I'm Scott Simon. Bill Littlefield has tended NPR's candy store for a long time. But Only a Game isn't the only Saturday source for sweets. You can hear our sports commentator, Ron, Rock Candy Rappaport, nobody actually calls him that, and Nougat, Nuggets of the News from around the world on Weekend Edition Saturday from NPR Choose News, that is, News.
I'm Bob See with these sports headlines. In yesterday's NBA action, Denver foiled Philly 86-77. Boston bested Toronto 114-111. Indiana beat Atlanta 103-92. Seattle stymied Detroit 93-72. Sacramento topped Utah 100-93. New Orleans nixed Golden State 96-85. And Minnesota beat Washington 110-91. Elsewhere, Miami mustered a 91-88 win against Memphis. New Jersey topped Orlando 99-95. Milwaukee shellacked Chicago 109-95. And the Dallas Mavericks defeated the Lakers in Los Angeles by a score of 110-93. For Only a Game, I'm Bob C. in Boston.
I'm Bill Littlefield, coming up on Only a Game, the answer to all your holiday gift questions, at least if the folks on your list enjoy sports. But first, Charlie Pierce joins me for a look at the week's sports news and to strike his annual Heisman pose. That is your cue, Charlie.
Excuse me.
Nicely done, as always. Speaking of the Heisman, who will take home the trophy this year?
Jason White of Oklahoma is going to win the Heisman Trophy. Oddly enough, he's now talking about maybe coming back for a redshirt year. He still has 1 year of eligibility left at the University of Oklahoma. He's not getting warm and fuzzies from the NFL because of his knee problems. He did not, of course, play well in his last game. Neither did Oklahoma. This apparently didn't matter to anyone that they were beaten like redheaded stepchildren by Kansas State. Given a vote, I would probably vote for Larry Fitzgerald of Pittsburgh, the wide receiver, who's probably the best player in the country and who won the Walter Camp Award as the best player in the country this year. I think Jason White is going to be no worse than everybody's second place vote, which means he'll win the most important andiron of them all.
No less an authority than Joe Theismann was, quote, incredulous when he saw which college football teams would be playing in the alleged national championship game, or games, I guess, as determined by the Bowl Championship Series, which is that thing over there with mud all over it. Do you share Mr. Theismann's incredulity?
Look, as a fan, I wanted to watch USC play LSU because you would be looking at 52-49. It would be a vastly entertaining, wonderful football game. They are the best two teams in the country. I do believe that what happened to Oklahoma should count. If Kansas State had won that game 23-20, I would have said no. But Kansas State dominated Oklahoma in every phase of the game, and it does matter when you lose. And I agree, while I probably would not use the word incredulous, I agree with Mr. Theismann.
Charlie, a U.S. District Court judge in Alabama handed down a ruling this week that may have consequences for you and for anybody else who writes about sports or anything else, for that matter, for magazines rather than for, say, newspapers, radio, or television. Are you concerned?
No, because there's no way this ruling will stand on appeal. I mean, as soon as the appeals court stops laughing, they will throw this order out. The order essentially says that Sports Illustrated and one of its writers has to reveal sources for the article that led to Alabama firing Mike Price before he'd ever coached a football game there. The judge says that if the legislature had intended for the scope of the statutory privilege to include magazines or other media, it could have done so clearly. There's no way that an appeals court is not going to look at this and say, look, newspapers and magazines, you know, it meant, and television and radio meant the same thing. If I were an internet journalist, I would be concerned because that phrase other media, I mean, I think that the average, you know, 60-year-old gray-haired white man who sits on the Alabama appeals court is going to be used to including magazines along with newspapers and television and radio. I'm not entirely sure he'd include the internet. That's going to be the interesting thing on this, but I do think that ultimately this order is going to get thrown out and Sports Illustrated is not going to have to do anything this judge wants him to do.
The New York Yankees have taken hits in their off-season acquisitions battle this week. Pitcher Andy Pettitte is an Astro now, but it now appears that Dodgers hurler Kevin Brown will join the Yankees. Do you think the boss is feeling any better these days or worse?
I was completely stunned, I have to admit, to realize that Kevin Brown was 38 years old and will be 39 for the entire baseball season next year. I mean, he did sign the $100 million contract with the Dodgers a few years back. He was on the disabled list 8 times. I can't remember, now that they've lost Andy Pettitte, I can't remember the last player that the Yankees wanted to bid for and didn't get.
Old and tired and maybe just a little desperate.
I think the Kevin Brown acquisition is a decent chance to take. If he's healthy, he's every bit the pitcher Andy Pettitte is. The problem is he's never healthy. And what they gave up was Jeff Weaver, who simply cannot pitch in New York City.
On Monday, the Orlando Magic ended their 19-game losing streak, thus avoiding the record of 23 straight losses held by the 98 Denver Nuggets and the 96 Vancouver Grizzlies, and so they celebrated with champagne in the locker room.
And you know what? I didn't mind very much. I mean, I went through this a long while ago with the Baltimore Orioles, who had that awful losing streak
at the beginning of the season,
under
right.
Frank Robinson. We did learn a new word, though, for turning your music up really loud. The word is crunked. Mm-hmm. I crunk, you crunk, he, she, or it crunk. Tracy McGrady, Orlando star, said, "We had the music crunked, man." Now, I've never crunked my music, but it doesn't sound good for my woofer.
Rasheed Wallace, the oft-fined Portland trailblazer, told the Oregonian this week that the NBA wanted athletes who were, quote, dumb and dumber. What is that all about?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to know which category Rasheed falls into, although what he's arguing is that the draft, that the high school players are coming, although he says high school cats. I haven't heard an NBA player refer to his cat. Friends as cats in 40 years because they won't know anything about the business. He's starting to feel a little bit victimized by the league. I'm not entirely sure that that's justified, but he is looking at the league in a very interesting way in that the league seems to market belligerent, edgy behavior and then get nervous about it when it actually winds up in the product. And I think this is a hole in which the NBA marketing is going to fall increasingly deeply over the next couple of years.
Charlie, we ought to have a tip of the only game cap to Coach Anson Dorrance at the University of North Carolina. He coaches the women's soccer team there. UNC won its 18th national championship last weekend, beating Connecticut 6-0 in the final. I wonder if Coach Dorrance thought he was fooling anybody when he maintained after that game that, quote, there is still parity in women's soccer.
Sure there is. North Carolina can beat hell out of everybody.
That kind of parity, I suppose.
Well, actually, let's be fair to Coach Dorrance. It's not exactly a dynasty. It's the first championship he's won since 2000.
Finally, Charlie, the folks who build and sell Dodge trucks want to assure us that the alternative to the Super Bowl halftime show that Dodge is sponsoring, the very Lingerie Bowl that we mentioned here last week, will be a real game. Now, do you buy this clarification?
No, of course not. This is absurd. This is a pay-per-view lingerie show. Not that I am fundamentally opposed to pay-per-view lingerie shows, but they should not masquerade as football games.
Charlie Pierce writes for the Boston Sunday Globe magazine. He joins me each week at this time to comment on the sports news of the week and various other things as well. Thank you, Charlie.
Mamacita, donde está Santa Claus? Donde está Santa Claus? And the toys that he will be.
Ah, can those strains of the season mean anything but that it's time for Only a Game's Holiday Sports Gift Guide? In fact, the 11th annual edition of Seasonal Same. No, they can't. And so, up, up, and away we go.
My name's John Bronner, president of FanGift Incorporated, and we're talking about our NASCAR gift baskets today. Our baskets feature great products like a team driver logo souvenir pillow. We have a NASCAR embroidered utility bag, a wonderful NASCAR logo cap, all kinds of fun stuff.
You've got other things besides NASCAR. You've got Major League Baseball, and you've got NCAA gift baskets, the whole line, right?
Yes.
Now, obviously, these have to be delivered. Do you find that the NASCAR baskets get there much more quickly than, say, the baseball baskets?
Absolutely. They're on a fast track. Hot delivery right to the client.
Deck your head with Cheesehead's yellow.
Here's another gift basket, courtesy of WisconsinCheeseStore.com, where Bill Erickson will pack into a cheese head-shaped carton a personalized selection of cheeses gaily decorated in wax and shaped like footballs, baseball gloves, bowling pins, and so much more.
We have a mascot in Wisconsin called Bucky Badger, and we have a cheese shape of Bucky Badger. We also have a quarterback, Brett Favre, and so that's pretty popular.
I understand that a badger is a mammal, but this cheese, is any of it made from badger milk?
We live in Wisconsin here, and we only milk cows.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Fresh butter and milk for you and your ilk.
Veteran Only a Game listeners may recall the Old Century baseball game I mentioned last year. Times must be good for Old Century. This year they've added what they refer to as, quote, an heirloom quality coffee table pinball golf game. And it looks like a beauty. Old friend Catholic Supply of St. Louis, purveyors in the past of statuettes of Jesus playing soccer, football, and hockey, have added skiing Jesus, rollerblading Jesus, and martial arts Jesus to their ever more formidable lineup. The annual dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy brings to mind the annual Red Sox-Yankees rivalry, doesn't it? Ah, well, whether it does or not, a chess set in which one side is the Yankees and the opposition is the Red Sox might make a good gift for the fan of either team. The rooks are catchers, the kings are managers, the pawns are crouching infielders. You get the point. Nor is that the only rivalry that John Davis of USAopoly offers.
We started with this one, and then we also have the Yankees versus the Mets. And then this year we launched the San Francisco Giants versus the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Okay, I got to ask you one question about this Yankees-Red Sox game, though. Were you able to construct the game in some way so that the Red Sox don't always lose?
Well, you know, not at this point yet. The Red Sox haven't found a way to beat the Yankees yet.
Even on the chessboard.
Even on the chessboard.
If you're determined to give a more traditional gift, but you're not willing to eschew the sports connection, you might consider a nutcracker dressed not as a soldier but as a player on your favorite NFL team. A company called Topperscott provides these sturdy and practical fellows and offers a variation on that old favorite, the snow globe. This one contains a snowman dressed in the uniform of your favorite NFL team, encased not in glass but in something, well, softer. We called upon a few resident radio geniuses to help describe it.
It feels like Jell-O, sort of like Jell-O.
I'm speechless. It's a familiar feeling, but I can't quite put my finger on it, if you know what I mean.
I can tell you what it feels like already. It feels like breast implants. Really nice ones.
Let us return now to the business of eating. What would the holiday season be without it? Bill McKinney is the co-host of a call-in radio program called Southern Sports Tonight, and he's the publisher of a collection of at least vaguely sports-related recipes sent in by his listeners called the More Than Matters Cookbook.
Now, well, let's back up now. It's not More Than Matters. See, in the South, Maters is short for tomatoes.
Tomatoes.
But, you know, we're giving everybody a bow on this one.
Well, I'm curious about one particular recipe myself.
Okay.
And I may be sorry I asked, but tell me about beer butt chicken.
Well, you basically take a whole chicken, you put him down on top of a beer can that you've cut the top out of.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens, the beer inside the can seeps up into the chicken during the smoking, and the chicken has tremendous flavor.
So sort of a tailgating natural.
It really is, because most people like to tailgate, and it's something that's very inexpensive. I mean, chicken is, you know, has not had the crisis beef has had with pricing this year.
You mentioned price, but I can think of several reasons not to try this with a cow.
Well, we haven't yet invented the grill big enough to prop the cow up in yet, but we're working on it.
In order to give beef lovers equal time on the grill, we offer now, for your holiday gift-giving delight, an opportunity to astonish guests at your next tailgater with burgers and steaks not only sizzling, but personalized.
My name is Amanda Sheets, and with mytailgate.com, we have a Fan Brand barbecue grilling iron, which clamps onto the grate of your grill, and it's a great gift for just under $20.
Okay, so the brand is right there on your grill, and you get that steak cooking, and you put the thing down, and you brand that steak with University of Texas or whatever it might
be. Exactly.
Okay. Any worry that somebody's going to leave with a big U Texas brand on his own hip?
Well, the nice thing is they actually attach to the grate on your grill. So it's not like you could take it and carry it around and start branding your opponents with it.
Well, that's good. So unless somebody actually passes out on the grill,
exactly.
He said.
Exactly.
Okay.
If you pass out on the grill, that's just your own problem.
In the context of grilling, I hesitate to introduce the subject of horses, but that's where we're going next anyway. The horse, of course, has inspired any number of artists, especially painters, but not until recently could you brighten somebody's holiday with a painting by a horse. Sean Wiley of Rerun, a charity benefiting retired racehorses, commissioned a painting by former Horse of the Year Cigar. She calls it a Monet.
M-O-N-E-I-G-H.
Now, I'm looking at a picture from your website, and I understand that Cigar is the only horse to actually take a paintbrush in his mouth and paint a picture.
He is. That is one multi-talented horse. We dipped several paintbrushes in different colors of paint and just turned them around and kind of offered them to him, and he snatched them right up and started waving them around kind of in the air. And so we just put our little pad of paper under there, and he just smacked, smacked, smacked.
Steve Rothwell of CollectAndSave.com offers a very large variation on another old favorite, a line of NFL and Major League Baseball bobblehead dolls that are 3 feet tall.
They're very lifelike. The facial features are amazing, and they're fantastic-looking pieces.
Lifelike is precisely what scares me, Steve.
I have one in my retail store, actually. We have a retail store also, and I have one where people come in the store, and it's borderline spooky.
Spooky, even borderline spooky, may not be the way you want to go this holiday season. On the other hand, if the concept catches on, maybe next year's holiday season will bring us the six-foot-tall Jacob Marley bobblehead. Actually, I guess he might go about 5'7" or 5'8" bent over as he'd be with the chains he drags around, old gray head a-bobbling. Meanwhile, whether you avail yourself of this season's suggestions or not, know that we're grateful that you've been listening. Happy holidays from everyone here at Only a Game.
I'd like you for Christmas. Please make my wish come true. 'Cause I'd trim trees and deck the hallways if I knew you'd be mine for always.
Only a Game is produced by Karen Given and Gabe O'Connor. Our technical director is John Ferrati. We had help this week from Peter Jay at member station WLRN in Miami. Our senior producer is Gary Wallach. To order a tape of Only a Game, call 1-800-909-9287, toll-free. CDs and cassettes are $15 postpaid. That's 1-800-909-9287. If you'd like to hear this program again, sign up for the Only a Game newsletter, or perhaps take a gander at the veritable cornucopia of silly sports gifts featured in this year's guide. Please visit our website, onlyagame.org. Our final word comes from Scott McKinney, co-host of Southern Sports Tonight, who reports that he arranged to have all of the recipes in his More Than Mater's cookbook kitchen-tested.
That person just got out of the hospital feeling much better.
I hope it wasn't the beer butt chicken. Must have been the bayou-busting meat pies, or maybe the mock potato casserole. I'm Bill Littlefield. Thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
I won't be blue on Christmas, if old Saint Nick comes through and he remembers that I'd like you for Christmas, New Year's, Easter too.
Major support for Only a Game comes from Bicon Dental Implants, offering discerning patients a same-day tooth replacement solution for failed root canal treated or missing teeth. Information is available online at Bicon.com or at 800-88-BICON.
This is NPR, National Public Radio.